Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we bring you a new podcast each and every Wednesday, and we do our best to bring you something different, something you won't hear anywhere else. If you're sick of the same old sports talk, this is going to be the place for you. There are a couple of ways that you can participate in the show. You can go check out new articles and a link to the podcast every single week. Head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com and see what we've got going on over there. New articles go up every week. We do put a link to the podcast there every week. This week, in fact, we were able to break some news regarding the Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight. You might not have known about this, but we were able to break some news regarding that fight. Kind of tells you what direction that fight might be going. We'll be talking about that a little bit more during the show today. But if you've got a question, maybe you have a comment, maybe you need some advice, or you just like to contribute something to the show, we'd love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Find us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we've got smart listeners. We'd love to get your thoughts. We'd love to get your opinions. We actually want to hear what you have to say. Today on the show, yes, we are back to our regular format. You know, we survived the summer. The kids are back in school. Football season is nearly here, and the Daily Dose is ready to roll. We're going to talk a little bit about what we have learned so far in the NFL preseason. Preseason games going, training camps going, number of things happening around the NFL. And there are some things happening around the league that have helped us learn some things. Do you realize that we have college football coming up this weekend? What? Well, we do. You know, next week, we will give you our Daily Dose college football preview. We'll give you some picks, take a look at the big conferences, let you know who's going to win the Heisman, even give you our selections for the college football playoff. But before we get to any of that stuff, we do have games coming this weekend. We'll let you know which ones are actually worth tuning in for. I'm also going to give you a few college football coaches that are coaching for their jobs this season. If they don't win some games, they're going to be out of a job. Not always a fun scenario to look at, but we will take a look at some of those coaches. Sometimes that motivates them to do better in the upcoming season. It does. Sometimes that's cause for a complete collapse. They just can't live up to the expectations, and we'll see a team go south very, very quickly. But we'll tell you whose seat is getting a little bit hot in the world of college football.
It sure is getting powerful warm in here.
And I'm telling you right now, these aren't small programs or names you won't recognize. Got some big names going to be on our hot list today. Of course, the big news yesterday was that the Cleveland Cavaliers traded point guard Kyrie Irving to the Boston Celtics. Does that deal make sense for either side? I've got a few doubts for both teams. Plus, this week, we do have the return of the Daily Dose Top 5. Yes, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I'll say this. Over the summer, we don't want to bore you just talking baseball, talking golf, talking auto racing. So we mix things up. We give you a few different things, and we did that. Gave you a tour of the 50 states, went through some of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history. We did some of those different things. Kind of mixed it up. Changed things up. Keep you all on your toes. I know we've got smart listeners, but we wanted to keep you all sharp. But wow, did I hear from a number of listeners saying that they missed our Daily Dose Top 5. Never fear, today the Daily Dose Top 5 is back, and you will not want to miss it. Of course, we mentioned it just a minute ago. Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor fight is coming up this weekend. We're going to tell you exactly what to expect in this mess a little bit later in the show. But leading into this fight, and I'm not paying attention much to this fight. I kept an eye on some of it, but I'm not like watching the press conferences. I don't care. I've told you, it's WWE. It's staged. It's fake. I don't care. But leading into the fight, I am starting to hear some things around the sports world that are a little bit interesting to me. A little bit interesting. And I can't figure out if these people are on the payroll and are trying to sell the fight, or if they actually believe what it is that they're saying. But I'm hearing from some very, very intelligent people, very smart media people that are out there, and they're saying some things that are a little bit interesting. Now, I've told you my views on this circus of a fight. I've already said it's nothing more than a money grab. Don't buy the fight, don't pay for the fight, and don't say you didn't know. But I'm hearing something that's kind of bothered me the last few weeks. And I know it's personal, it shouldn't bother me, but it does. I'm hearing arguments back and forth. You know, Floyd has never fought anyone like Conor McGregor. Okay, that's not really true. Conor McGregor is going to smother Floyd and force him to fight. Okay, that's also not really true. This will not be a fight because Conor McGregor is not a boxer. Okay, I'll give you that one. I'll listen a little bit to that. But then I heard this. This will not be a fight because Floyd Mayweather is the greatest boxer of all time. Okay, hold up. What did you just say? What did you just say? Floyd Mayweather is the greatest boxer of all time? No, he's not. No, he's not. I've got 3, 4, 8, 9, 23, 24 guys ahead of him. See, I can't put you on the list of greatest boxers of all time when your best fight is against who? A past his prime Zab Judah? A way past his prime Arturo Gatti? An over-the-hill Manny Pacquiao? That's the greatest fighter of all time? No, sorry, I can't put you up in the realm of Sugar Ray Robinson or Joe Louis or even Muhammad Ali. See, they actually fought champions, and wait for it, they fought those champions in their prime, and they beat them. Or, I've also heard this, again, from some intelligent people, I'm hearing Floyd is the greatest counterpuncher of all time. Hey, when he gets in there with McGregor, McGregor better be careful, because Floyd Mayweather is the greatest counterpuncher of all time. Here's my problem with that. Yes, Floyd Mayweather is a highly accurate puncher. He's a very technically skilled fighter. But dude has 26 knockouts in his entire career. That doesn't exactly make me afraid of his counterpunching. I'd be way more afraid against a guy like Archie Moore or a Jake LaMotta. Now, one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time? Yes. Yes, I'll put Floyd on that list somewhere. You can put him up there on the list with guys like Willie Pep, guys like Pernell Whitaker. He rarely gets touched, but slow down on the best fighter of all time. His list of opponents is terribly mediocre. And I struggle to put him on the list of greatest counterpunchers ever when he has toddler hands. We will take a look at this fight a little bit later. I just might have a few predictions for you later in the show. I suppose we should talk a little bit of Major League Baseball. You know, there seems to be three types of teams in MLB right now. You have the teams like the Chicago White Sox, the Phillies, San Francisco Giants. They're out of it. They're done. They're just riding out the string. They just want the season to be over. Please hurry up. Let these last, 40 games or whatever it is go quickly so we can move on to the offseason. And then you have those teams that are really pushing for a playoff spot. You've got the Yankees. You've got the Twins. You've got the Cardinals and the Brewers. They want every single game they can get. They know every single game is a chance to play their way into the postseason. And then lastly, in Major League Baseball, you've got that final group of teams. Because doesn't it feel like right now, teams like the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Washington Nationals and the Houston Astros, they're just trying to lay low, hide, stay healthy. Hey, nobody get hurt. Everybody just take it easy. We just want to get into the postseason. They just want the season to end as soon as possible. The Astros want it to end as soon as possible. Because they're starting to look like they're running out of steam, aren't they? The Nationals, they want it to end because they're still playing well. But we know historically, that could end at literally any second now. Like any time now, we could just see the Washington Nationals just go in the tank. That might happen. And the Dodgers want it to end right now because they're getting a little bit banged up. They don't want to get any more banged up. And they're playing phenomenal baseball. They know that at this point in time, nobody can touch them. Now they just made this trade for outfielder Curtis Granderson. If there was a fast forward button on this Major League Baseball season, the Dodgers would probably be hitting it. Pitchers Yu Darvish and Clayton Kershaw are now both nursing sore backs, so they've got to get them better. Worst case scenario is for these three teams to start getting worse by the time the postseason rolls around, about 40 games to go. We've got a stretch run here, and these games are going to go by very, very quickly. We're going to see these games just tick off, because now football's coming. Now football's starting. We're not going to be paying attention to baseball every single day. Going to be a 40-game sprint. Going to see who can finish. Coming back, we will be discussing the Cleveland Cavaliers trading point guard Kyrie Irving to Boston. I'm not sure I like this deal for either team. There's some positives and some negatives for both sides on this deal. The NFL preseason is a few games in, and if you've been paying attention, which I'll be honest, is not very easy to do, there are a few things that we have learned so far. And you know, we have to start getting ready for what should be a very, very fun college football season. Plus, the Daily Dose Top 5 makes its return.
Harry Potter, what are you doing listening to Rogue Intel? That podcast is for Slytherin.
Hi guys, it's Kim from Round Trip, the travel podcast where we share our stories and travel experiences. You can listen to Round Trip at rogueintel.com.
Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
The NFL preseason is now underway. It's tough to watch though, isn't it? Like, I'm trying to watch it. I'm trying to get into the games. They are not fun to watch. I would say that the first few series are at least entertaining, but I'd be lying a little bit because they're not. You have a bad mix of starters and players that aren't even going to be on the team when the season starts, so there's no continuity. It just makes for sloppy, awful football. There's no flow to the games. It's real choppy. There's so many penalties. There's so many mistakes. You can just see that these guys aren't used to playing together yet. They're not used to playing with, hey, it's all eight starters, but three guys are backup scrubs that aren't even going to make the practice squad. It's kind of tough. You know, we're having a hard enough time watching Blake Bortles and Brian Hoyer. Now you're telling me I have to watch their backups? Can we please, please just drop the preseason? Get it down to at least two games already. Instead of holding us hostage for four of these unwatchable events. It's coming soon. I'm calling it right now. 18 games with just two preseason games? Get ready for it, because it's on its way. It's all fun and games until you aren't making money, and I've got a suspicion that the NFL is not making enough money with these crappy, awful preseason games. It's going to change very, very soon. But even though the games have been awful, even though we've seen some bad play, we have learned a few things in watching these terrible games. I've noticed a couple of things that have stood out to me. There's a couple things that I've learned so far in this NFL preseason. We're really, really quick to anoint the next round of great players, aren't we? Remember last season? During the season? We talked about it here on The Dose. Everyone was wondering why the NFL ratings were down. And we heard a number of different things. We heard it was because of the presidential debates. Yeah, because everyone wanted to watch that mess. Or maybe it was the kids watching games on their phones. Or maybe a number of people were saying it was because of the Colin Kaepernick protests. Yeah, or else maybe it was just because there really aren't that many must-see players or must-see teams. Name the must-see players in the NFL. See if we can do that. Tom Brady. Let's see. Ben Roethlisberger. Antonio Brown. Drew Brees. Like Matt Ryan or Julio Jones. Odell Beckham. Cam Newton. So see, when we see a player like a Mitchell Trubisky come out and have some success, wow, do we get excited, don't we? We're like, oh my goodness, he's so good. Why is Mike Glennon ever going to get a play? You need to name Trubisky the starter right now, and let's just move forward. Slow down. That's not exactly how it's going to work. We see Patrick Mahomes with Kansas City. He's had some success. He's looked good. He's got a big arm, doesn't he? We're already starting to hear some grumbling coming out of Kansas City. Hey, where's Alex Smith going to go? He doesn't look like the starter to me. He looks like he may need to move on. Because Mahomes, this rookie, wow, did you see him going against the fifth and sixth string? No, I know it's a fifth and sixth string, but he's playing with fifth and sixth string guys too. Yes, but he isn't a fifth or sixth string guy, is he? Like, he should be a little bit better, shouldn't he? He should excel in those situations, shouldn't he? Leonard Fournette looked really good. He's talking about how easy it was. Well, I played in the SEC. This wasn't so much. I was used to the speed. Now, you might be used to the speed, but slow down on calling it easy. We'll see how easy it is when Jacksonville gets into the regular season. We'll see if it's still easy then, Leonard Fournette. I kind of doubt it. You saw the Cleveland Browns. DeShone Kizer looks like a bona fide NFL quarterback. Hey, if you need a test of how preseason actually looks, keep in mind, Geno Smith looked pretty good for the New York Giants. Everybody needs to take a breath and realize It's just preseason. Don't fall for it. But when we're so hungry for some must-see players, wow, we'll jump on it quick, won't we? I'm telling you right now, DeShone Kizer, he's going to be the guy that leads the Browns to the promised land. Is he? Is he really? Because he did something minorly good against a backup team? I don't know if that's how that's going to work. And I've got news for you. Come week one, you're not going to see the scrubs. You're not going to see 8 guys starting on defense that are never going to start in the NFL again. It's a little bit different, but we're quick to jump on that. You know, Hard Knocks has been pretty good so far. I've learned that already. I felt like last year with the Los Angeles Rams, and I've told you this before, I love Hard Knocks. I want to see what is said in the locker room. I want to hear what they're saying in closed door meetings. Really, really fascinating stuff to me. And I felt like last year with the Los Angeles Rams, I hate to say, but the series may have run its course. And then this year, I have realized that the series is fine. It was just the Rams that had run their course. The Rams were just awful to watch. There was nothing interesting about them. There weren't that many interesting players. There weren't that many interesting coaches. The greatest thing we got to see, we didn't even get to see because we would have wanted to see Jeff Fisher get fired. We didn't get to see that. So far, as Hard Knocks on HBO is following around the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we have seen a few things on Hard Knocks. Hey, Jameis Winston, quarterback down there, he says all the right things, doesn't he? Like, you listen to him, you're like, man, this kid really gets it. He's a really mature guy. He's a smart guy. He's going around to every single player. And I mean every single player, like all 80 of them. And he's telling them, hey, I got your back today. Let's go. I got your back today. Let's go. I've got your back today. Let's go. 80 different times. It's just that he doesn't always do the right things. Like, for all the talk about his weapons, and he does have some weapons down there now, he's not really producing much so far in the preseason, and I'll wait. I'll withhold judgment. But he's settling for field goals. And then he's driving down the field. He's running around. He's falling down. He's throwing interceptions. You were saying such good things, Jameis. You were talking such a good game. But you're not playing a very good game at all. I think he just tries to do too much. Instead of just taking the sack, he throws the red zone interception while falling down, going backwards. It's just brutal. But he does say all the right things. Then you've got Joe Dirt. Joe Dirt, did you like that? Backup linebacker Riley Bullock, I think his name is. He doesn't think he should be called Joe Dirt, but he kind of looks like Joe Dirt. And then they show his parents in the stands, and people around his parents are calling him Joe Dirt. Why are they calling him Joe Dirt? He doesn't look anything like that. Well, he kind of does. Just not quite as good looking as Joe Dirt. Other than that, so that was entertaining. And then we saw Tampa Bay kicker Roberto Aguayo get cut. Hey, I'm all in on Hard Knocks this year. It has been entertaining. And you know one thing I've noticed that's really been a lot better? Way, way less slow motion shots of that sprinkler system. I don't care about the sprinkler system. Every single year, we get about 37 shots. I don't want to see the sprinkler system. Stop showing the sprinkler system. Show me something else. They haven't done that very often. They must have heard some complaints about that. Some other things we've learned this year. You know, there are a few players kneeling this year, aren't there? And here's the thing about it. I actually think it might be hurting Colin Kaepernick. We saw Oakland Raiders running back Marshawn Lynch. He's sitting on the bench. He says he's done it his entire career. For the past 11 years, he does not stand for the national anthem. Of course, no one has ever seen that. And of course, Marshawn isn't going to expand on the decision to sit down.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
But we do actually have photos of Marshawn Lynch standing during national anthems in the past. But whatever. In Marshawn's mind, he may have been sitting. I don't know. In fact, in Marshawn's mind, he may have been singing the national anthem all these years. I have no idea. Seahawks defensive lineman Michael Bennett, he's sitting too. He says he plans to continue to do so in an effort to push a message of social injustice in this country. Hey, it's his right to do it. Here's the thing. I'm not exactly sure where all this is going, but these guys do have the right to sit. That is the freedom that we have in this country. But here are a couple of drawbacks that I do see. I do think it weakens the case for Colin Kaepernick. Remember, Colin Kaepernick said when he was looking for a job that he would be standing this season. So apparently he felt that the social injustice he had witnessed was what, fixed? Or why was he going to stand? Or was that just to get a contract? Now, why are these guys not standing if Colin thought everything was all better? Are they seeing something different than he saw? I would guess so. Second, are you hearing much about these protests anymore? Are we just becoming completely jaded to them? That might be my biggest concern. You know, when John Carlos and Tommy Smith held up a fist on the medal podium in the 68 Summer Olympics, it was powerful. If they did it every week, let's be honest, we might have stopped noticing though, wouldn't we? There are people in this country that do not have a voice. There are people in this country that need people like professional athletes to stand up for them. I would hope that these people sitting have some sort of plan to help these people when they are taking up this cause. I would hope it is not just to point out that our nation has flaws. Anyone can point out a problem. Let's see some guys sitting down that actually have some solutions. That's what I'd like to see, because otherwise we're just going to get desensitized to it and we're going to stop paying attention. We're already doing that a little bit, aren't we? How many guys are sitting right now? 3, 4, 5? I don't know. It's barely even covered anymore. If we start to lose any sensitivity to it, it's a lost cause. That scares me a little bit. We have learned that so far this season. You know, we continue to see a lot of injuries in these preseason games. At some point, we're going to see someone important get hurt. The Seattle Seahawks lost starting left tackle George Fant for the season with a knee injury. The Denver Broncos lost defensive lineman Billy Winn, also a knee injury. The New England Patriots lost defensive end Derek Rivers. We're only halfway done. We've still got more games to go in the preseason, but here's the key. Did you notice one thing? Only one offensive player on that list and no big name skill position player. Can you imagine if we lost to Russell Wilson? If we lost to Tom Brady? If we lost to Drew Brees? People would be screaming, let's get rid of these preseason games. It's defensive players. Who cares? Whatever. There's another defensive guy, isn't there? And these are linemen. So even more of a who cares. I don't care about the linemen. Go get another big guy. I don't know. We'll find somebody. We continue to see these injuries in these wasteful preseason games. It's going to change. It's coming. You know, the other thing I've noticed, there are some truly, and I mean truly, horrible quarterbacks in this league. And that isn't changing anytime soon. Over this past weekend, I'm going to give you some names. Let's play a quick trivia game, shall we? Yeah, let's do that. I'm going to give you some names. You tell me what they have in common. Okay? Are you ready? Here's some names. You come up, Daily Dose listener, come up with what these guys have in common. Brian Hoyer, Mike Glennon, Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch, Tom Savage, Scott Tolzien, Blake Bortles, Jared Goff, Jay Cutler, and Josh McCown. What do those guys have in common? Anything? Can you think of anything? I'll tell you what they have in common. They all started this past game. And you might be sitting there saying, well, yeah, but it's the preseason. We threw someone else in there. Hey, some of these guys are going to be starting in the regular season. And when I say some, I mean most. Plus, you know, we've got guys like Joe Flacco, Andrew Luck. They're still out. I don't know when they're coming back. Joe Flacco's got a bad back. You don't mess with the back, do you? The back is one of those injuries you just don't want. Andrew Luck and Cam Newton are coming off of shoulder injuries. You know those shoulder injuries are not the easiest thing to come back from, especially for guys who make their living throwing a football and getting hit in those shoulders. That's not going to be good. So in the meantime, we're seeing horrible quarterbacking. Down in Jacksonville, Blake Bortles has the yips. He can barely complete a snap, let alone actually complete a pass. There are some really bad quarterbacks in the NFL right now, and they're going to be playing this year, not watching. Now, I know this goes back to a number of different things, but I'll tell you one thing it goes back to. This era of spread college offenses, quarterbacks not having to huddle, not having to take a snap from center, not having to call a play in the huddle, it's catching up to the NFL. And we're seeing it right here, right now. Hey, the other day in New York Jets practice, Christian Hackenberg got kicked out of the drill because he didn't know how to call a huddle. He didn't know how to do that. He didn't know how to huddle up and call a play. That is the state of the NFL today. It's not good. We're starting to see these spread offenses where guys look to the sideline. Hey, Donald Duck, picture of Donald Duck. Everybody, Donald Duck. All right, snap it, go. That's all they do. They get to the NFL, and we're surprised somehow that some of these guys struggle to pick up some of the NFL concepts. We're surprised. Christian Hackenberg, why does he know how to run a huddle? Because he's never done it. How in the world would he know how to do that? He's never had to do it in his life. Starting to see some bad quarterback play. Last thing that I think I've learned so far watching this preseason, and it's kind of a weird one, the NFL Players Association going down a really, really odd path. Hey, I understand when they represent someone who they feel is being treated unfairly. I do. I get it. I understood when they represented Tom Brady. I thought Tom Brady cheated. I think if you got Tom Brady on a lie detector, he'd probably say he knew he cheated. Whatever. That was a rules violation. They felt the player was not getting treated fairly. I understand that. Here is where I struggle. When the NFL continues to fight for guys that are involved in domestic abuse cases, and they do it again and again and again, Ezekiel Elliott now is going to be used by the NFL Players Association to right what they deem to be a wrong. Ezekiel Elliott, if you don't know, Dallas Cowboys running back, accused of some sort of domestic abuse against the female he was dating at the time, who, to be fair, honestly, she seems to be maybe a little bit nuts, but that doesn't change the fact that she had bruises all over her from somewhere, like something happened. Hey, I totally understand the Players Association going to bat for some of these guys who they think are just getting railroaded. I get that. I do. But when you see a player, hey, you sprung this drug test on us, or we deflated footballs because we thought it was just a joke, or whatever, I get that. But if you're just going to defend a player, every single player who slaps a female around, you're going into some really, really weird territory, aren't you? Like, is that what you want to be doing? Hey, anytime there's a domestic abuse case, we're going to defend that guy. Really? That's what the Players Association is for? I thought the Players Association was to take up for players that needed to be taken up for. I don't know if that's the case here. Getting into some weird territory there. The NFL, of course, it's always interesting. It is a 365-day soap opera, and we should be in for a fun season. So we did have some major news break yesterday in the NBA as the Cleveland Cavaliers traded point guard Kyrie Irving to Boston. Of course, Kyrie had made some news a few weeks back when he stated he was not happy playing with LeBron James. He wanted to be moved. There were reports that Kyrie barely spoke to his teammates during the playoffs. He was sick of LeBron telling him what to do all the time. He wanted to go make a name for himself. Don't forget that it was Kyrie Irving that hit the shot that gave Cleveland their first championship in like half a century, not LeBron. So I guess I can understand it on some level. Hey, if the Cavs play well, it's LeBron that gets the credit, right? Every single time. And every single time they lose, it is LeBron's supporting cast that takes the blame. I'm sure it got old to hear after a while for a guy like Kyrie Irving, who's sitting there saying, hey, not only am I Robin to his Batman, I'm pretty good in my own right, and I'm kind of sick of having to be the little brother here, have LeBron pat me on the head here, have LeBron yelling at me all the time. Got a little bit sick of it. Decided you want to go do something else. Now, you might wonder why it took so long for a deal to get done. Honestly, sounded like they weren't getting much in the way of offers. And that's what happens in these kind of situations. Because we all knew Kyrie wanted out. Hey, if you know someone has to get rid of something, you're not going to really make them that good of an offer, are you? Like when you were a little kid, if the kid down the street said he didn't really like this football anymore, he didn't really want it that much, maybe you'd like to buy it. You're not offering him 10 bucks for it. You're like, dude, I'll give you a nickel for it. Maybe a dime. I know you want to get rid of it. I know maybe your mom already told you you have to get rid of it, so I'm not giving you much for it. I think that was why this took so long. I think Cleveland was waiting around trying to get the right deal. Did they get the right deal? I don't know. Yesterday, the Cavaliers traded Kyrie Irving to the Boston Celtics for Boston point guard Isaiah Thomas, Boston forward Jay Crowder, and then there's a rookie big man, Andre Zizek, or whatever his name is. Plus, they got Brooklyn's unprotected pick, which should be pretty high because Brooklyn's going to be awful. I know the East is bad, so it's kind of hard to rate who's really bad and who's just sort of bad and who's super bad, but Brooklyn should be pretty bad. They look like they might be one of the worst teams in the entire league. What this trade tells me is that Cleveland is preparing for life after LeBron James. They are looking to start putting together a young nucleus to either lure LeBron into staying or to take over when he leaves. There is one thing that I don't understand. It is really starting to feel like LeBron is leaving next year, right? Doesn't that kind of feel that way? He's not giving real good answers about, LeBron, are you going to leave? LeBron, are you going to go somewhere else? We've already heard Magic Johnson talk about LeBron. Magic might be getting fined. He probably should be getting fined. Going on a late night show. Wink, wink. Yeah, we're not talking to LeBron. Wink, wink. Yeah, Magic should probably be getting fined for that. I don't think you can really say that. But it does kind of start to have that feeling like LeBron's leaving, doesn't it? Like he's maybe going to LA, maybe he's going to somewhere, maybe he's going to New York, I don't know. Might be going somewhere else though. So here's the thing that I don't understand. How bad must it be to play with LeBron James that Kyrie Irving was like, no, not one more year? Because if LeBron is going to leave next year anyways, then who cares? Cleveland would be yours. You can be the man. You can do whatever you want. Kyrie was like, no. I don't want to be here. I'm not doing this one more second. I'm done. I may still believe the earth is flat, but even I'm not dumb enough to stay in Cleveland for another year. This kind of strikes me as weird. A little bit odd. Now, I do see positives and I do see negatives for both teams in this deal. For the Cleveland Cavaliers, hey, they get a very explosive player in Isaiah Thomas. Maybe. If he has actually recovered from that hip injury that took him out of the playoffs this past season. But I'm telling you right now, shoulders, hips, and backs are never, ever, ever an easy fix. Isaiah Thomas is an amazing scorer, but he doesn't play much defense. So basically, Cleveland got what you already had in Kyrie Irving. Very, very good scorer, no defense. Now, the addition of Jay Crowder in this trade gives them a solid defender. Not as good of a shooter as you'd like, but he can shoot it at times. And then that draft pick definitely lets Cleveland look to build for the future. Are they any better? Yeah, I think Jay Crowder makes them a little bit better. Are they better for the future? Sure. Are they significantly better right now? No, not really. They're kind of about the same. Maybe, like I said, one more role player with Jay Crowder there. Other than that, it's basically the same. Now for Boston, they get Kyrie Irving, who is one of the best small scorers that I have ever seen. I mean, Kyrie Irving has a knack for being able to score inside over much larger players. My biggest problem with Kyrie, one, he doesn't play great defense. Two, he over dribbles and works way too hard, and he tends to wear down the stretch as a result of that. So Boston loses Jay Crowder, but don't forget that the Celtics had already picked up Gordon Hayward and Marcus Morris, so the hole left by Jay Crowder is probably already filled anyway. They may have had trouble finding minutes for Jay Crowder already. I guess here's the thing I'm thinking. Maybe this was Boston's way of avoiding giving that big contract to Isaiah Thomas after this season. He will be due a big contract. Hey, he's a big-time scorer. He's an all-star. He's due that big contract. Are you giving a huge contract to a guy who's like 5'8"? And is now coming off of an injury. Now, the one thing I do like from Boston's perspective is the fact you would think Kyrie Irving has to be coming into this situation with a huge chip on his shoulder. I am going to prove I am the man. Now, I'm not sure if anyone really won this trade. They both got what they think and helped them. I'm a little surprised that Cleveland traded Kyrie within the conference. And that tells me two things. Either they didn't have a better deal. I guess that's probably most likely. And they just don't fear Boston whatsoever because they traded him within the conference and were like, yeah, go over to Boston. We don't care. We'll still beat you. Maybe that's how much confidence LeBron James has that he can still beat Boston. That Boston team is going to look significantly different, though, this year. Now, Cleveland is going to want to prove that Kyrie Irving made a huge mistake in ever leaving LeBron. If you don't think this is personal, you haven't been paying attention. This will be very personal. It'll also be personal between Kyrie and Isaiah Thomas. Don't forget. Kyrie Irving was the first pick taken in the 2011 NBA draft. Isaiah Thomas was the last pick taken in the 2011 NBA draft. And these two teams should be meeting in the playoffs. Oh, and by the way, they also open the season against each other in Cleveland on October 17th. This is going to be a great rivalry in the making right here. Okay, it isn't much, but we do have just a little bit of college football coming up this weekend, which, yes, it's kind of exciting. It's kind of exciting. Next week, the next Saturday, will be the full opening weekend, but we get just a tiny glimpse of college football this week. We're going to take a look at a couple of the games worth watching, but before we do, there are a few coaches in college football you might want to keep an eye on. These guys had probably better produce, or they could be looking for a new job very soon. And I don't even mean at the end of the season. I mean sooner than that. And I'm also not talking about the coach at like Southeast Missouri State or Stony Brook. I'm talking about big name, big conference programs. These are names you're going to recognize. And here's the other thing to keep in the back of your mind. Coaches like Chip Kelly or Alabama defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt or North Carolina defensive coordinator Gene Chizik, who was the head coach at Auburn, all those guys should be available. So there are guys out there that you could grab to replace these guys if you fire them and if you act soon enough. With that said, here's five guys that are kind of on a hot seat right now. Now, this first one is a tough one because when you look at Notre Dame, they're a little bit like they're a victim of their own expectations, aren't they? Yes, they won titles back in the 40s and they won a few titles in the 70s, but their fan base still kind of thinks they should be winning titles every year today. But they have higher academic standards, so they struggle to get some of the top athletes that some of the other schools do get. I mean, you know, Stanford and Clemson have just as high of standards and they're doing just fine, but let's ignore that for a second. Brian Kelly has gone 59-31 with the Fighting Irish. It's not bad. He even got him to the national championship game back in 2012. But he went 4-8 last season. And here's the problem. It's not the 4-8. You can sit there and say, hey, he had a rough year. Recruits didn't come through. Some kids didn't step up. He had some injuries. That's not the issue. The problem for Brian Kelly is that his personality is rubbing people around that university the wrong way. And because of that, those administrators that are in positions of power, yeah, they're way less forgiving when they don't like you. Like, they're already looking at the bottom line. Let's see, you didn't win. You didn't get enough recruits. You didn't do this. You didn't. Oh, and you're kind of a jerk? Yeah, Brian Kelly, you might want to have a good year this year because your job is definitely on the line. Okay, here's another guy. And he took a team that had kind of bottomed out under Rick Neuheisel. And in his first four seasons, Jim Mora went 37-16 at UCLA. Hey, you're going to get people excited when you do that. But he's gotten thumped twice in a row by USC. And I don't mean like little beatings. I mean USC has put one on them. And with a recruiting base like Los Angeles, don't you just kind of feel like UCLA is underachieving every year? Last season, the Bruins, again, were 4-8. You might want to turn that around pretty quick. People in LA, they'll support you if you win. If you don't, they want you to go find someone who will win. UCLA Jim Mora might want to find some wins. Go down to SEC country. Remember back in 2012 when Kevin Sumlin took over for Mike Sherman at Texas A&M? He had this crazy quarterback. They called him Johnny Football. And the Aggies went 11-2 and they beat Alabama in the process. But since that season, Kevin Sumlin, he's just 33-19. And don't forget that people down at College Station, they sunk $450 million to refurbish that stadium. You think they spent $450 million to finish just a little above 500? I don't think so. That's not going to go over big in Texas. That's not going to go over big pretty much anywhere. Here's the interesting part, though. UCLA plays Texas A&M Sunday, September 3rd, next week. Yeah, we might be calling that one the Remax Bowl. Because whoever loses that might be putting their house up for sale. That's going to be really, really interesting to see. Sumlin or Mora is starting off their season in 2017 with a loss. Going to be an interesting game. Let's move back over to the Pac-12. You know, the Arizona Wildcats took Rich Rodriguez after he had been fired from Michigan, failed to produce at Michigan. And I still think when Rodriguez got the job at Michigan, he was trying to put in this program, spread offenses, athletes all over the field. We're just going to throw it around and run all over the field and pass it all over the place. You don't have those kind of kids coming out of Michigan, and that is your base recruiting. That's where you're going to get most of your kids from. Didn't work out at Michigan. You could go to Michigan and get those big, strong offensive linemen. You could get that power running game going. Seems to be what Jim Harbaugh is trying to do. Rich Rod's offensive style, his style in general, just didn't work at Michigan. So Michigan lets him go. Arizona grabs him and says, hey, we have athletes down here. You can come out west and you can probably have some success running that kind of scheme out here at Arizona. And he started off pretty good. Arizona went 8-5, and then went 10-4 in 2014. They went to the Fiesta Bowl. Seems like a long time ago though, doesn't it? Because in the past two seasons, Arizona is just 10-15. And here's one side note. Arizona hired a new athletic director this offseason. When you bring in a new athletic director, everybody's job is a little bit on edge. Usually those athletic directors, they want to hire their guy. Hey, I didn't hire you. I want to go find the guy that I want. I want to go find the guy that I'm going to put my name behind. That cannot be good news for Rich Rodriguez down at Arizona. He's on a very hot seat.
It sure is getting powerful warm in here.
And our final coach, I'm going to put one more on this list. And I'll be honest, he should be okay. He should. But he's going to be feeling some pressure. See, last year, the Tennessee Volunteers had championship hopes. And I'm not talking about winning the SEC East. No, they were loaded with all kinds of talent. And they had a challenging schedule, but it was a manageable schedule. But Tennessee didn't win the East. The Volunteers went 9-4. And at the end of the regular season, they lost to Vanderbilt. Now, some of that was an abundance of injuries. But there is also a feeling around Tennessee that head coach Butch Jones and his team, they just didn't respond well to having expectations set that high. People were hoping they might win the SEC. They might go to a college football playoff game. They lost some talent this year. So the spotlight for Tennessee won't be as bright as it was last year, and their schedule will be softer. But I'm telling you right now, Tennessee had better step up, because those boosters, it's not even that they're looking at Butch Jones and saying, he's horrible. Those boosters at Tennessee, they're looking at guys like Chip Kelly and saying, can you imagine Chip Kelly's offense in the SEC? And for that reason, Butch Jones at Tennessee better have a pretty good season, or he could be in some serious trouble. Now, we do have some college football games this week. And yes, it's not great. It isn't. But it's real games. And they're going to be very revealing. See, in college football, unlike the NFL, where we talked about how awful those preseason games are, college football doesn't have preseason games. Every single game counts. So when Michigan loses to Appalachian State,
37-yard field goal, this is it. This is it right here. Gensel ready. The snap's good. The whole
block!
The kick's
oh!
good! The kick is good! Oh! The Mountaineers are going to try to take
it's
it to the big house!
Gensel to the big house!
20! 15! Ah! The Mountaineers have just beaten the Michigan Wolverines!
It counts. So these games, they may not feature marquee matchups. Not yet. That'll be next week. But you never know what you might get. And they are going to let us know what to expect next week when things do heat up. See, the thing about college football, especially in coaching in general, is most teams make their biggest improvements from week one to week two, from first game to second game, because until you're really dealing with live situations, you don't know how it all looks. You just don't. Unless you return everybody, and most teams don't return everybody, you're like, I know we return 8 this year, but those 3 guys, I don't know how they're going to be. And our quarterback, I don't know what he's going to do when he really sees a true pass rush. And our defense, they look good in practice, but what does that really tell us? So when you see your team play in week one, then you start to make some adjustments. You start to say, okay, here's what we struggled with. Here's what we did well. Let's see if we can focus on the good things, get rid of some of those bad things. So the adjustments that we see from week one to week two, those are huge adjustments. That's a huge advantage for these teams playing in this opening weekend. Here's a few games coming up this weekend. Like I said, they're not great, but they could be revealing. On Saturday, 12:30 Mountain Standard Time, you have Oregon State going to Colorado State. Now, Colorado State is hoping to contend in the Mountain West. Mountain West is, guess what it is. They should have a pretty decent offense. They're not going to have a very good defense. Oregon State, meanwhile, isn't very good, but they're getting better, slowly, I guess. Here's the key. Colorado State plays Colorado next week. That's a big rivalry game. And they get the benefit of this warm-up game. CU is not playing. Colorado's not playing. So Colorado State gets the advantage of playing one game ahead, making those adjustments, and trying to figure out what it is that they do well. Could be big for next week. Another game coming up this week, similar situation. Saturday at 1 o'clock, Portland State versus BYU. No, I don't expect much from Portland State. But BYU should be pretty good. They've got quarterback Tanner Mangum returning from injury. In week 2, Brigham Young faces LSU. How big of a matchup could that be? Then in week 3, they have Utah in the Holy War. This game against Portland State will give us a hint as to how those games are going to go. BYU struggles with Portland State. Going to be a really, really rough season. If they go out and they handle Portland State, they're doing some good things, and it looks like Mangum is all the way back. Hey, LSU's going to be on alert, aren't they? Utah in the Pac-12 may want to start paying attention. I'll give you two more. Two more games. Again, they're not great. Saturday at 5:30, South Florida plays San Jose State. Okay, this one is not going to be on most sports fan radars, but I'm telling you right now, South Florida is legit. You know, head coach Charlie Strong, he got fired at Texas, and South Florida grabbed him. I'm telling you, his team might be even more talented down at South Florida. Quarterback Quentin Flowers is a legitimate threat. That guy is good. He scored 42 touchdowns last year. San Jose State is going to be awful, but if you want to see South Florida, you want to see those Bulls put up some numbers, yeah, they're probably going to put up some pretty big points against San Jose State. So if you just want to check out a team, hey, nothing going on Saturday, it's around dinner time, put on a game, hey, South Florida, they're going to be pretty good this year, and they're probably not going to be on a lot, so maybe this is your chance to catch them. And then I'll give you the last game. Again, it's not a great matchup, but it does give us some information. At 8 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, Stanford plays Rice. Now, Rice, of course, is going to be below average, but Stanford should be excellent this year. They returned 16, maybe 17 starters from a team that went 10-3 last year. And you might be sitting there saying, yeah, but they've got to replace Christian McCaffrey. Okay, and you're right, they do. But they return pretty much their entire offensive line. That makes it a little easier to find playmakers, doesn't it? And you might also say, why would I want to watch them play Rice? This is going to be a blowout. Totally understand. I get it. But in 2 weeks, Stanford goes to the Coliseum to play Southern California. That is going to be huge. This game will at least give you a little bit of a preview what you might expect when they face Southern Cal. Hey, it's not a full slate of college football. It's something. And then next week is packed with some big, big matchups. Cannot wait for college football. Should be a really, really fun season. Hey, our Daily Dose Top 5 is coming up next. You never ever want to miss that. Of course, the big story this weekend will be the Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather fight. You want to know what to expect in that fight? I'm going to tell you right here. Hey, just a quick reminder. Make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose and do any shopping that you may need to do. Loot Crate, of course, delivers the best in merchandising and collectibles, featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. You can go get a crate, a subscription crate, or just individual items. The September crate is called Robotic, and it features items from Blade Runner, Aliens, and Star Trek, whether they beep or whether they speak. Many of our favorite characters are robotic. You know, Loot Crate has any kind of merchandise that you can think of, and it's quality licensed memorabilia. They've got hoodies, they've got sweatshirts, they've got t-shirts, they've got all kinds of things for your desk at work. They've got all kinds of things that are going to make for great gifts. And you can always go back and you can order past crates or past items. Best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you place your order, just put Daily Dose in the coupon box, DALYDOSE, will get you 10% off of your order. Now, if you'd like to recommend the podcast, we would appreciate that so much. Please just let your friends, your family, your coworkers know they can subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts are hosted. You can go over to iTunes. You can get it there. You can go over to blogtalkradio.com. They've got every single episode. And if you click subscribe over there, you'll be sure to never miss a single show. Let's say you want to share the podcast. You don't want to talk to anyone. Just click that little share button wherever you listen and send your friend or whoever it might be a link to the show. Sometimes that's easier than having a conversation. Plus, if you have that friend that's technically challenged, why do I have friends who are younger than me that are technically challenged? Like, shouldn't you know more than I do? But some people just don't get it. Some of the people that are trying to listen, I don't even know what a podcast is. How do I get that? Do I turn on my radio? No, you just go download it. But you can send them a link to the podcast, make it a little bit easier for them to find the show, and make sure, if you get a chance, stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. Of course, the Daily Dose is a member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, and they've got a number of shows going on over at Rogue Intel. You're going to like them, you're going to get addicted to them, and you're going to listen to them each and every week. So go check a few of the other podcasts that are up over at rogueintel.com. Now, as we do every week, and when I say every week, I mean every week except for during the summer if I don't feel like doing a top five. We are going to get to our Daily Dose Top 5, a very popular segment on the show. Okay, it is time for the circus, kids. Yes, it is. This week on the show, we are going to give you the Daily Dose Top 5 things you can expect to see in the Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor fight. Hey, Floyd Mayweather is 49-0 in the boxing ring. Mayweather was basically born and raised in a boxing gym. Both dad and uncle were fighters and trainers. So he got in there very, very young. He is, like I said before, one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time. He can't hit very hard, but he's very slick. And he touches you and he racks up points. Meanwhile, Conor McGregor has never fought a professional boxing match. He's 21-3 as a mixed martial arts fighter. But in this fight, he can't kick or grapple with Mayweather. So that might not mean all that much. So for all the talk about this fight, and we've been getting this fight jammed down our throat now for weeks and months, what is actually going to happen Saturday night in Las Vegas? Here are the top five things I want you to expect on Saturday night. The Daily Dose top five things you can expect to see in the Mayweather versus McGregor fight. Number five, might seem a little bit odd. You're going to see some empty seats, apparently, because seats are not selling so good for this fight. You know, when Mayweather fought Pacquiao, remember back, was that a year or two ago? Floyd Mayweather fought Manny Pacquiao. The cheapest seat at the MGM was $4,000. Right now, you can go to Ticketmaster. You can find tickets for $1,500. And those are still going down because apparently no one's buying them. You know, when tickets first went on sale for this fight, Ticketmaster was actually expecting them to go so fast that they actually rolled out this weird new verification tool to help make sure who was purchasing all the tickets. It hasn't even been needed. Now, by Saturday night, they might be leaving tickets on pillows in Vegas hotels just to make sure they have the seats filled. I want everyone to know right now, just hearing that this fight is not sold out gives me just a tiny, tiny amount of faith in humanity. But don't be surprised come Saturday night to see some empty seats. And don't be surprised to see pay-per-view numbers being down. I'm telling you right now, this fight is not worth getting. This fight is not worth watching. Unless they fix it and they make it Rocky and Apollo knock each other out in the final round, this is not a worthwhile fight. You're going to probably see some empty seats on Saturday night. Number four, you're probably going to see and hear some booing. You know, I keep hearing about how Conor McGregor is going to rush Floyd Mayweather. He's going to look for the big knockout punch, right? Well, that isn't really what Conor McGregor does. He's always been more of a measured fighter. He picks his spots. He uses his kicks. He wears someone down. But if he does try to chase, Mayweather doesn't care. Floyd Mayweather has been chased his entire life. He'll faint. He'll slip. He'll get on that bicycle and he'll start backing up and he will avoid that rush. That's what he does. Floyd Mayweather has gone 49-0 avoiding guys that want to rip his head off. If you think for 1 second this guy with no boxing experience is going to catch him, then you haven't been paying attention. Mayweather is going to run. And you know, McGregor might even try to do the, come on, fight me, wave him in, come on, you got to come fight. The crowd is going to boo, the crowd is going to get mad. And you know what? Floyd Mayweather will not care one single bit. He's just looking to get win number 50. Number three of the top five things that you're going to see this Saturday night in the Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor fight, you're going to see Floyd Mayweather winning round after round after round and Conor McGregor getting frustrated again and again. You know, there was big talk last week about how the Nevada Gaming Commission approved 8-ounce gloves for this fight instead of the heavier 10-ounce gloves that would also give the fighters a little more protection. Now, I don't know why in the world we would expect the Nevada Gaming Commission, which is clearly corrupt, to do the safe thing here. This fight shouldn't even be sanctioned, let alone fought with lighter gloves, but I guess money talks, right? Because the Nevada Gaming Commission, there's no way they should even be sanctioning a fight between a guy that's 49-0 and another guy that has never fought professionally in a boxing ring. As soon as the news broke that this fight was going to be fought with 8-ounce gloves, we heard the media jumping all over it. Hey, that's a definite advantage for Conor McGregor. He's used to fighting with lighter gloves. You know, he usually wears 4-ounce gloves, and he's a big puncher, so this is going to help him immensely. Even Conor McGregor himself says, hey, if they approve the 8-ounce gloves, I'm knocking Floyd Mayweather out. Let me ask everyone a question out there. Does anyone know what weight that Floyd Mayweather has fought at for his career? He's been a featherweight. He's been a lightweight. He's been a welterweight. And then more recently, he's fought at super welterweight. That, for the record, is 126, 135, 147, and 151 pounds. Do you know what size gloves you wear at 126, 135, 147, and 151? That's right, folks. 8-ounce gloves. Until you go over 152 pounds, you wear 8-ounce gloves. Soon as you go over, then you can get into 10-ounce, possibly 12-ounce gloves. This isn't a better deal for Conor McGregor. This isn't more dangerous for Floyd Mayweather. This is exactly what Floyd Mayweather has fought his entire career with, and he is 49-0 wearing those 10-ounce gloves. He'll outpoint McGregor round by round. He's not really going to hurt him, but he's going to frustrate him, and he's going to run him ragged, touching him here and there, tap, 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 points, tap, 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 points, tap, 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 points. But you're going to see Mayweather just ticking these rounds off, 10-9, 10-9, 10-9, 10-9. Unless McGregor takes a crazy chance or he just wears himself out, you're just going to see Floyd Mayweather winning round after round after round. Moving on to number two. Things you can expect to see on Saturday night. You're going to see Floyd Mayweather get a unanimous decision. And at the end of the fight, Floyd's going to be clean, and he's going to be awarded a unanimous decision. And you might hear some boos, and you might even hear some people talking afterward about how, you know, McGregor should have just cut off the ring. If he would have just let his hands go, he just didn't throw as many punches. Did you notice that Conor didn't throw as many punches as he wanted to? Because if he would have, he would have knocked Floyd out. Yeah, exactly like the last 49 times have gone. Just like the past 49 other fights that Floyd Mayweather has won, everyone's going to be talking about that other guy should have thrown some more punches. Somehow it doesn't work that way when you fight Floyd, though. And the number one thing to expect on Saturday night, there will be talk of a rematch. And there will be talk of a rematch in the octagon. See, after the fight, Mayweather's going to get his decision. And McGregor will say something like, you know, if Floyd wants to prove what a great fighter he is, then he should give me a rematch in the octagon. And Floyd will be like, hey, I'll fight you anywhere, anytime, anyplace. And for like a week or maybe 2 weeks, the sports world will be buzzing about, hey, is Floyd Mayweather really going to get into the octagon with Conor McGregor? Is he really going to fight him in an MMA fight? No, he's not. And he never, ever, 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 ever will. Floyd Mayweather isn't an idiot. If he got in the octagon, McGregor would have him out cold in about 30 seconds. He's not going to get in there ever. But on Saturday night, he'll probably say that he will. But see, you already know that because you listened to the Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, next week, like we discussed, college football is beginning this weekend. I know, it's not a full slate of games. But the full slate of games is going to take place next weekend, and we will get you ready with our Daily Dose College Football Preview Show next week. The biggest storylines to watch, the best teams from each conference, the top Heisman candidates, and much, much more. Make sure that you tune in for our Daily Dose College Football Preview. And one more thing here real quick, before I forget. I have been very down on this Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight. And a good portion of the reason that I'm down on this fight is because I think a fight like this sours the general public on boxing when there actually is a fight coming up that will be worth watching. See, on September 16th, we have one of those fights. Gennady Golovkin is going to be fighting Canelo Alvarez in Las Vegas for the middleweight championship of the world. This is a fight I'm very interested in. And this is a fight, I'm telling you right now, we may have to do something very, very special for that fight here on the Daily Dose. We're looking at doing some really, really cool stuff, something we have never done before for the Triple G versus Canelo fight. Just keep that in the back of your mind. Please keep that in the back of your mind. We're looking at trying to do something a little bit different here on The Dose. Hey, next week, we will also recap this Mayweather-McGregor mess and keep you up on the latest stories in the world of sports. Plus, like you saw today, the Daily Dose Top 5 is back, and you know that you have to be sure to tune in for that. Have to say thank you to everyone out there for tuning in this week. As we get back to normal here on The Daily Dose, feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. You can email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Thank you all for listening. I do appreciate it. We will see you all next week for the college football preview. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.